I believe I could listen to him preach every day, all day long. I listened to that yesterday, and yet it was just as fresh and new to me today as yesterday. Okay, we look at our definition. Let's see. You ought to have heard it. He pounded it into your head. God always uses the best means to accomplish the best or highest end for His glory. Does it bother you that everything God does is designed to showcase His glory? Isn't that a little boastful, a little egomaniac? Why not?
He's entitled.
He's entitled to all the glory in the universe.
But His glory, He said when God is glorified, it brings the best for His people.
Okay.
So that statement that He made really resounded with me, because it is hard, because in our culture, that you don't brag on yourself, and if you are, you know, you're arrogant and on. So I think that, you know, looking at it with that perspective, he does deserve it. I mean, who else would ever think of such a thing?
Yeah.
And he does. But I have to distance myself from the culture and remember that this is for him and he's the one that did it. Kind of like your parent. You know, sometimes when you're a kid, you do things because it's the good for your parent, not that you want to do it necessarily.
Okay. For His glory and our good. And that's what He does for us circles up to be for His glory, but it also circles back down to be for our good. So it's just kind of an eternal circle there. For human beings, wisdom is the wise application of what you know. Okay, so it's skill in applying what you know to life. For God, it's choosing the best means to accomplish the best end. So that's basically the two things that we're talking about. In all situations, the highest and wisest goal is the glory of God and the good of His people, and never are the two conflicted. What works for God's glory is for our good. So we can trust in that. John Piper says, divine wisdom is the perfect factual knowledge. What is knowledge? We keep talking about these things. Let's see if we can define them.
Knowing the facts.
Knowing the facts. That's good. Perfect factual knowledge. And the perfect situational insight. What does he mean by that? Situational insight.
Understanding what's happening.
And the omnipotent resolve, that's the powerful determination by God that together will succeed in achieving His intended righteous goals. So God uses His knowledge in the best possible way. Define for me the difference between wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom is the applying of knowledge for the best results. What's the difference between wisdom and knowledge and omniscience? God knows everything, so what's the distinguishing features between them?
He knows everything, but He knows it in a way that supersedes anyone else's ability. He understands how, the when,
the why, the who, but His wisdom overshadows everything. Okay.
Understands and created it to be a certain way.
That's a good stab at it. I have to think about that. Omniscience means He knows everything. But wisdom means He has the skill to use that knowledge in the best way. So they're all three related, but they're separate little compartments of their meaning. Omniscience really is cognitive. It's what you think in your mind. And wisdom is practical. So that's kind of the difference. Okay, in our first study question, in Romans 11, Paul has been describing God's redemptive plan, which moves him to a doxology of exalted praise of God's wisdom. So I ask you to think about the terms and define them. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and unfathomable his ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who became his counselor? So how would you define the depth of God's wisdom? All right, depth could be the degree of intensity.
God is the foundation.
Okay.
That would be deep.
That would be deep. He's the foundation.
I think a depth is being incomprehensible.
Incomprehensible. Okay. The definition I had was profound or extent. The word comes from, the Greek word is bathos, B-A-T-H-O-S. Do you know what a bathysphere is?
It goes down really deep.
All right. It goes down really deep. Bathos means deep, and sphere, of course, means round. And it's that little round vehicle they drop off the side of a ship that goes down, down, down where people can't go. So think about that. We have trenches in our ocean that are so deep we've never found the bottom. So you think about that little bathysphere dropping way down into the Mariana Trench, and God's wisdom is just that deep. It's so deep you can't find the bottom, you might say. How then would you define riches? The depth of the riches of his wisdom.
He has infinite resources and can use them as he pleases, and he can make anything out of nothing.
All right. Infinite resources that he can use as he pleases, and he can make everything out of nothing. The word means wealth or abundance, a fullness of things. So he has an infinite wisdom. In other words, his riches, he's overflowing, abundant in riches. Unsearchable,
non-comprehension,
inscrutable, unable to be discovered fully. The Greek word means you can't search it out, obviously. So does the English. How about unfathomable? Seems like it's the same thing. In the Greek, the word means it cannot be searched out. If you're good with your computer, you can go online and get a Bible study program called eSword for free. And when you use that, it will show you the Greek word. And sometimes that helps a whole lot to understand what's being said. It's called eSword. It's totally free. It has a bunch of commentaries. It's all this public domain stuff, but it has the Strong's commentary, the Strong's Concordance that gives you the meaning of the word. So,
E-sword. Sword.
Sword. Thank you. Sorry. .com, I think it is, but a guy puts it out for free, and it's a very helpful study aid. Okay, how about, what's the definition of judgments? God's judgments.
I think here it's his plan, his proceeding.
Good. His plan and his way of proceeding, the best means that we've been talking about. And then ways.
The methods that he uses to accomplish his purposes.
Good. The methods that he uses to accomplish his purposes. Basically, he's saying God's wisdom is so deep I can't understand it. It goes way over my head. The wisdom of God tells us that God will bring about the best possible results by the best possible means for the most possible people for the longest possible of time. God's wisdom is seen in the selection of proper ends and proper means for the accomplishment of those ends. So that's been pounded into our head over and over again. I had you skim Proverbs 8, where wisdom is personified as a woman. That's always been a strange proverb to me, the strange idea, because sometimes it seems to be speaking of Jesus. Okay, focusing on particular verses, summarize God's relationship to wisdom. Okay, his wisdom preceded creation. He used it. Somebody else?
Well, it even said that when wisdom delighted in the humans that God created, so
okay.
It had that personification.
Delighted in what God had created, particularly the humans. Wisdom was God's master workman. In other words, that was what he used to do his work. Poetry is sometimes a bit difficult, isn't it, to understand? Proverbs 8:32 went on to the next verse, has a therefore, now therefore. So what does wisdom advise mankind to do in view of wisdom's relationship to God? Keep his ways and listen to him. Now, therefore, O sons, listen to me, for blessed are those who keep my ways. Guide your life by God's wisdom. As Dr. Lawson mentioned, throughout the Bible, God's creation of the universe is used as an example of his wisdom and a way of understanding him and his attributes. I had you look at Psalm 19 and Romans 1. Why do you think God used creation to help us understand him?
To tell of his glory.
To tell us of his glory. We see the glory and marvel at it.
Well, it's a non-verbal way.
Okay.
That anybody.
Good. A nonverbal way. The heavens are telling of the glory of God. So everybody, anybody, everywhere, whatever their circumstances, should be able to see the creation and marvel at it. Do you ever look at a flower? Those little tiny things are so beautifully designed and all just exactly alike. And the way the petals are arranged in a rose, there's a purpose in it. There's a structure to it. The more you study nature, the more astounding it becomes. Those of you who are nurses are bound to, I don't see how a doctor could not be a believer in God because of the design of the human body. What else is this to answer this question? Okay, I don't.
Well, it goes on to talk about what are his attributes, talking about how do we see his attributes. But it's vast, it has a splendor about it, it's a mystery, we can't understand it,
Okay, I like it.
It shows his greatness.
It shows his greatness. The more you know about science, and the more you know about how the universe is put together, the more you stand in awe of what he has done. When you think about how far away the stars are, and how they're just arranging, I was sitting there thinking about him hanging the earth in the air. I mean, it's just hanging there. I'll have to go home and ask Roger the scientific explanation for that if he's got one. But God just hung it there and it just hangs. It doesn't fall into the sun. It doesn't fall further out in the universe. It's right there. I'm sure it has something to do with its critical mass. But and I thought about all those stars, how far away they are and why aren't they closer? And it's just astounding what he's done. Every morning I get a little devotion on creationism, and it was talking this week about the ear, how it functions and all that's involved in there. So very tiny and intricate. It's just astounding what he's done.
John's ministry does a little slip about creation, and he said recently scientists have found another bright light in the universe somewhere that they were not expecting to find.
Okay.
And he says that we should, we should, I can't think of what our atmosphere, but anyway, he said scientists need to go back to the beginning and call the heavens, you know, where God created the heavens and the earth, you know, that we need to go back to calling it the heavens.
Okay, rather than the universe. Yes, the Hebrew does not use this term, does not even have a term for universe. It just calls it heavens and the earth. Okay, creation, I think, is probably the greatest thing that we can relate to. It's the biggest thing we can relate to, and we can understand some of it, so we can begin to understand some of God's intricate operations and his order and his beauty. We should realize from looking at creation that a being made it, and this being needs to be worshiped. I had you looking at Proverbs and Jeremiah and list some of the ways that God demonstrates his wisdom in creation and then add some of your own. So, what'd you find in the Proverbs passage particularly? Okay, by his wisdom he established the earth. By his understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the deeps were broken up and the skies drip with dew. So he's talking about probably the flood when it talks about the deeps being broken up. So the flood itself would show the wisdom of God. He changed the initial chaos of the universe into one of exquisite order, just by his word. Jeremiah, he established the hydrologic cycle. That's what he was talking about. And then Psalm 104. I want you to turn to Psalm 104 for just a minute. This is one of my favorites. And there may be something about it that you do not understand or don't know for sure. Psalm 104. What I'm reading from is the, not the New American Standard, but the Christian Standard Bible. My soul, bless the Lord God. Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with majesty and splendor. He wraps himself in light as if it were a robe. I think that's talking about the Shekinah glory that he just wraps himself in. Spreading out the sky like a canopy. We've mentioned before that the universe is still expanding. He is spreading it out. Laying the beams of his palace on the waters above. And we still don't know what the waters above are. But he's laying the foundation of his dwelling place on those waters. The latest from the scientist that answers in Genesis is that these are waters outside the universe, which is astounding. I mean, I didn't think there could be anything outside the universe. But that's what they are thinking. What?
It's out there with that new light they
found. Okay. Making the clouds his chariot. I love the picture of God riding on chariots of clouds, walking on the wings of the wind, and making the winds his messengers. Winds and messengers and angels are the same thing. So, flames of fire his servants. He established the earth on its foundations. It will never be shaken. That's that promise he made for us after the flood. But verses 1 through 5 deal with creation. And then verses 6 through 9 deal with the flood. You covered it with the deep as if it were a garment. The water stood above the mountains. At your rebuke, the waters fled. At the sound of your thunder, they hurried away. The mountains rose and the valleys sank to the place you established for them. You set a boundary that they cannot cross. They will never cover the earth again. There's that promise. God made a boundary between the heavens, between the water and the land, and they're never going to flood us again. At the, let me start back, and we say that if we lowered all the mountains and we raised all the ocean basins, there would be enough water to cover the whole earth almost 2 miles deep, about 10,000 feet, if we leveled everything out. So at the end of the flood, God pushed the mountains up and he dropped the water, the ocean basins down, and all the water ran off the earth into the water in the ocean. We're 70% water on our climate. So we've got plenty of water to cause a global flood. God's just got it stored in the ocean with a boundary on it, so it's not coming back over us again. I don't care what, how many ice caps melt. God is in control of that. So to me, this is just a beautiful psalm. And then he goes on in the rest of the psalm and talks about what happened after the flood and how he established everything again. Now, Psalm 119, 1 and 6, how does David respond to God's wisdom? How does he respond, and how should you respond? Oh, come on, girls.
But he acknowledges it, and he praises him for it.
All right.
And then he takes himself and says, I don't want to be at fault for transgression because of who you are.
Wow.
So keep me pure. Keep me blameless.
That's beautiful. He sees what God has done and then looks at himself and says, I don't want to be in transgression against you. We should study these details. I know that the rest of you are probably not nearly as hyped up on creation as I am. I wasn't a science major, and I didn't care about it a long time ago until I began to study the creation in view of God. So it kind of helps to have a scientist at the house to understand things. Study it. Encourage your children to study it. Meditate on its perfections and how they reflect the perfections of God. Johann Kepler. I was merely thinking God's thoughts after him. He was a scientist, a well-respected scientist. Since we astronomers are priests of the high God in regard to the book of nature, it benefits us to be thoughtful, not of the glory of our minds, but rather above all else of the glory of God. So when you do study it, recognize the glory of God and not your own brilliance. In Daniel, he praised God for his wisdom in revealing the interpretation of the dream. Beyond that, he praises God's wisdom in what other areas?
He sets up and deposes kings.
A little louder, please.
He sets up and deposes kings.
Okay, sets up kings.
He gives wisdom to the wise.
Good. Oh, isn't that nice? He gives wisdom to the wise.
Yeah. And he created
all right. So his governance of the earth is to be praised as well.
He said that light dwells with him. He knows what's hidden.
Okay.
He knows what's in the darkness.
Light dwells with him, so he knows what's hidden to us. We have a quote there from Ben Franklin. From the way that Ben lived, I'm not sure he really understood what he was saying here, but... I have lived, sir, a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of the truth that God governs in the affairs of men. That's kind of comforting, isn't it? The greatest evidence of God's wisdom is in 1 Corinthians 1. The salvation of men through a crucified man. For since in the wisdom of God, through its wisdom, the world through its wisdom did not know God. What do you think he said meant in verse 30 when he says, Christ became to us wisdom from God?
I thought that it refers to the life, teaching, death, and resurrection of Jesus. of Christ.
The life teaching, the life and the teaching.
The teaching, the death, and the resurrection.
Resurrection of Christ, okay.
This could be salvation.
Yeah, wraps it up in salvation. I like what he said, Dr. Lawson said, if you don't have Christ, you're just a clever fool. Because in him, all the wisdom of God is wrapped up. If you don't know him, you come up with some of the most absurd theories. In Ephesians 3, elaborate on God's wisdom as seen in his redemptive plan. We're basically just answering what Lawson said, aren't we? All right, so simple that a five-year-old can understand, and so profound that a man can spend his entire life studying the scripture and never plumb the depths of it. Paul was particularly talking about the redemption of Gentiles there. The Jews had always claimed God as their own, and they didn't think Gentiles were going to make it to heaven. But he says, in the wisdom of God, he planned a way to break down that wall between Jews and Gentiles and bring them to him on an equal basis. Yes, that I thought that Dr. Lawson should have added that fourth point, because at Ephesians 3:10 it says, so that the manifold, and manifold means many-colored, the many-colored wisdom of God might now be made known through the church to the rulers and the authorities, where? What's going on?
Chaos.
What?
Here's chaos.
Chaos. Oh, yeah, here's chaos. What's going on in this verse? The angels, that's the rulers and authorities, those are terms for angelic beings. In the heavenly places in heaven are looking at the church and seeing God's wisdom in saving a wicked bunch of men and a bunch of people. So the church itself, and those are the true believers, I don't mean the building or even the local people, but the all the people who are true believers in Christ are showing the angels God's wisdom. You'd think they would know that, but they get an extra demonstration of it by watching God's plan of salvation. Okay, 1 Corinthians 1:20, Paul states that it was through God's wisdom that men could not come to know him through their wisdom. I found that a bit strange, because so you explain it. It was through God's wisdom that men could not come to know him. Why? We would be inclined to be arrogant and to boast about pulling off our own salvation. Salvation is meant to be a gift from God and not something that we accomplish on our own.
Uh-huh.
You
are questioning who he is. And the plan of salvation is just, there's no one else that can do that. He is it.
Nobody else could have pulled it off. We think so highly of ourselves, but God just says, you're fools. You could not have possibly accomplished this on your own. And yet we have so many people trying to save themselves by their works. Is it possible for mankind to fully understand God's wisdom?
No.
Okay, you got that one down. Why not?
He's the omniscient one. Our minds are so much less than his.
Oh, yes. Teeny, tiny little minds we have when he is the mind of the universe.
Back to that earlier question, the depth of his wisdom. Uh-huh.
It's It's just so much over our head, we could never begin to understand it. So who are we to say, what are you doing, God? Why? And I've done it many times in my life. God, I don't understand why you're doing this. But who am I to question God's wisdom? He sees it all, and he knows what to do. All right, who hath known the mind of the Lord? As he mentioned also, the last chapters of Job are really good to put you in your place. Where were you when I did this? Where were you when I did this? God is willing to share some of his wisdom with us. So how does this come about?
We ask.
We ask. That's pretty simple, isn't it? All right, and studying his word, that's where the wisdom is to become. God gave Solomon wisdom and great discernment and breadth of mind. If any of you lacks wisdom, ask it of God. So we have to humble ourselves and ask for it. We reject our own wisdom and we ask for his. We must reverence him, obey him faithfully, serve him to become wise in living. He's not going to give us wisdom if we're not willing to obey. If he tells us something and then we don't are unwilling to do it, it's not going to work. There was another one in Proverbs 13:20.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of
wisdom. Okay, I skipped 9:10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. How do you develop a fear of the Lord? And what is a fear of the Lord?
It's respecting, reverence, and awe. Yeah, and awe, being in awe of God's power and authority.
Respectance, reverence, and awe of God's authority. So we have to recognize him from who he is, for who he is. Okay, what about the one in Proverbs 13:20? Oh, that's good. I was thinking about walking with wise men and listening to them, but she said we need to keep company with God. Yes, he should be our best friend and the one with whom we spend the most time.
You know, I listen to this every time I walk in the morning, and my phone was acting up, and I went back to the very first attribute, and he was taught the first things he says in that introduction about where our minds should be and where our minds are, and it was about, you know, having, you know, tells you who you are. So that's why the keeping company with God.
Keeping company with God came from. All right. Yeah, I'm glad that you all have the ability to go back and listen to these again, because I think you will benefit from it. I've listened to them 5 or 6 times, and I learn something every time, and something hits home every time I listen to them. What are some of the benefits of gaining God's wisdom in Proverbs 8? We will speak words of wisdom, won't we? Others?
Happiness.
Happiness, definitely.
Common sense. Common sense.
Common sense.
Understanding everything in Jesus, and we can have a vast supply of it.
All right. It delights the Lord. Yes, again, he's delighted to share his wisdom with us. Sorry, that's my phone. We come to know God more fully. He shares his wisdom with us, and wisdom guards us if we walk in it. We learn righteousness, justice, equity, and good ways. We will enjoy what we learn of God. Then we will avoid evil ways. In Isaiah 31, the nation of Judah was being threatened by Assyria, and they were deciding that they would go and ask Egypt for help. So, how would God's wisdom be displayed in this situation?
Through
let them learn what would happen if they didn't consult him.
All right, he let them learn what would happen when they didn't consult him, because the prophets were all saying, do this, and everybody, the leaders were saying, let's go to Egypt and trust in Egypt. And he said, I'm going to destroy anybody that destroys you. So God's plan was wise from the beginning. He says, woe to those who go down to Egypt for help and rely on horses and trust in chariots, etc. They don't look to the Holy One. Yet he also is wise and will bring disaster. So he's going to destroy Assyria. Now the Egyptians are men and not God. Their horses are flesh and not spirits. The Lord will stretch out his hand and will help all who fall. He's still going to punish Israel, but he's going to destroy Israel's enemies. How can reflecting on God's wisdom help us in times of trouble? All right, he has everything under control.
We need to wait on him even when it seems he's not there.
Need to wait on him even when it seems like he's not there. You've all had the experience of praying and thinking your prayers didn't get any higher than this ceiling. Trust me, God has heard them and he will answer in his proper time.
I think just having the security of
All right. The security of knowing that God's will be done.
And I try to look for how is this going to glorify God?
Okay, good. Good advice. Look for how will this glorify God. We can trust that our troubles come at just the right time and endure just the right length of time in order to accomplish the right purposes.
Well, we've lived long enough that we can look back in our past
Yes.
and see all the times he's delivered us and blessed us, and it helps build our trust and rehearse what he's done for us in the past.
My faith is much stronger now than it was when I was 20.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure that's true for everybody, because we've seen what he can do for us. 2020 has not been a good year, and I don't expect 2021 to be any better. But we know that we have a God who is powerful enough to accomplish his plans, and that those plans were made in eternity past in perfect wisdom, and we can trust in that. No matter how bad it gets, we know that it is a part of his plan. That in itself is comforting, just to know that he has planned this all out ahead of time and that it will end in good. And I thought of the old song, I bet we could all sing it. Trials dark on every hand and we cannot understand all the ways that God would lead us to that blessed promised land. But he guides us with his eye and we'll follow till we die, for we'll understand it better by and by. By and by, when the morning comes, when the saints of God are gathered home, we will tell the story how we've overcome, for we will understand it better by and by.
Also, Lynette, his wisdom and our experience with his wisdom as Christians changes the way we ask. I can remember a time when I was more or less telling him what he needed to do in the early times, because it was so amazing to have somebody that powerful on my side. But now I realize that he is the wise one.
All right.
And it's his will, not what I think he needs to do. So that experience part really has played into the way I approach him.
Okay, good. Yes, that experience of life and looking back, like we pray and we try to figure out the best way to solve this problem, and we tell God, if you'll just do this, it'll be all right. Thy will be done.
So when back in question E, when you were talking about Proverbs 3, and it was about, it said add other ways that God shows other ways the earth shows God's wisdom from your knowledge. And it was funny because it snowed last week in Midland, Texas, and they're really, really, I mean, they're really dry anyway, but they're about 6 inches, need about 6 inches of rain.
Okay.
But if you had 6 inches of rain at one time, it would flood.
Right.
So they got 4 inches of snow that melted slowly.
Okay.
And watered the yards.
And watered their yards.
And there was no flood.
All right. A tiny little observation of how God's wisdom is at work. It's just wonderful, isn't it, to be back together.
I was having lunch with a friend yesterday, and it just hit me about how ludicrous this is. She had a relative who, back when daylight savings time first came into being, her lack of understanding was so immense. She said, another hour of daylight is going to burn my yard up. And sometimes I think that is exactly who I am.
All
and
right.
He's up there going, really? Humbly, thank you very much.
Another day of daylight's going to burn my yard up. Bless her heart. She was probably a blonde.
She was an older gray-headed woman.
Okay. Like we say in the South, bless her heart.
Oh.
I was reading a novel this Christmas period, and I came across three essential prayers of three words each. And they're on my bulletin board at home, but I'm not sure I can remember it. But I know that the last one was, into thy hands. Let's see. Oh, it's the three essential prayers. It starts with, Lord, have mercy. The second one was, thee I adore. So, Lord, have mercy deals with our salvation. Thee I adore will deal with our entire life. We are to be worshiping him. And the last one was, into thy hands. If you don't know any other three prayers than those, they're worth it. Okay, let's see how we're doing on time. We're just about done. God's wisdom is his originally. Wisdom starts with him. Ours is derivative. It comes from him. Wisdom is his necessarily, given who he is. He has to be wise. It's impossible that he not be. It is his perfectly. There are no flaws anywhere in his decision. It's his universally, eternally, and perpetually. He knows all there is to know, now and forever. It is also discerning. He rightly perceives every situation for what it is. It is strategic, making the best choice. It is skillful. The skillfulness of a master craftsman, just sitting up there creating and directing everything that, in the right way. God's wisdom is astute. He rightly calculates every situation. God's wisdom is contrary. What do you think about that? God's wisdom is contrary. Contrary to what? The ways of the world. And what we might think, it's counterintuitive. We might think it would be one way that he should do it, but it's not. It's mysterious. The hidden things belong to God. He has not told us everything. And it is unfathomable, beyond our comprehension. Wise living starts with fearing the Lord. Wise living grows by receiving God's word. And God's the wise living requires that we ask for it specifically. Any other comments or questions that you might have today?
Just a comment. Sorry, you're angry. Our pastor is in Los Angeles for 9 days. He's pursuing a doctorate, and he's gone to a
studying under Dr. MacArthur and Dr. Lawson. So, I can hardly wait for him to bring that back.
He's probably at the Master Seminary.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Lawson is on the board and the faculty there at the Master Seminary.
I'm not jealous.
Yes, you are. I am.
Just a smidge. That just must be.
It's wonderful. Yeah, I've heard both men in person, and it's different. It's fun to hear them online, but hearing them in person is a wonderful experience. So I'm proud of your pastor, and I think you are to be commended. Anybody else?
No, thank you for starting back.